When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 1444.GE1104, certificate number 51591, the world's tallest building. My building has
every convenience. Not the building, but the idea of it. The platonic ideal of a world's tallest building.
Is that right? Are we not talking about the actual, which is the Wiz Khalifa?
Yeah, the Wiz Khalifa in Pittsburgh. Uh-huh. It's a big yellow and black skyscraper rising half a mile above the streets of Pittsburgh.
And isn't that only the tallest building because it has some radio tower? Isn't that the game, right? Big radio tower?
It's a whole game now.
Yeah.
What's a building?
What's a building?
Right?
Boing.
Don't you sometimes wonder?
I do, actually.
I mean, sometimes it's an easy call. Is this a building? No. It's a pen from a hotel in Canada.
Yeah, that's right. Is this my mother?
But no. Is this a building that we're in? Yes.
It's a building.
But then there's things in the middle. You never thought of that, did you? Things that are more building-like than a pen, less building-like than a house.
What is, you see this often now where someone builds a kind of lean-to, but it's like got a hot tub in it. It's their backyard kind of like hangout spot, but it's got a roof and walls. Is that a building?
Yeah. What about all the blue state urbanites putting yurts in their backyard for some reason?
Is a yurt a building?
I mean, it wasn't built, but it had to be erected.
Have you stayed in a yurt?
I'm going to say no. My friends had to once. Their Airbnb fell through, and suddenly they were in a friend's yurt.
Yeah,
they were not pro-yurt, I remember.
At Doe Bay, the marvelous vacation resort that often has cool music that's up on Orcas.
Yeah.
They have a bunch of cabins, but also yurts. And I've stayed in a yurt. What a thrill.
Now, are you just mentioning the amazing music scene at Doe Bay because that's what others would say, or because you performed there once?
I have performed there more than once.
Well, then we know that it's an amazing scene.
The Long Winters performed there, and also one time they asked me to go out into the forest and hide with my acoustic guitar.
Until the festival was over.
That's right.
Please leave.
And I went out and hid, and then they had guided this enormous group of people, come on, everybody, we're going to go on basically a forced march, and they marched all these people out into the forest.
It sounds like the worst concert I've ever heard of.
It was really crazy. I was kind of up on a hill, and then they were like, okay, everybody, let's let's bathe in the forest silence.
This was a religious cult.
It was a little weird.
You're out there with a guitar.
But it was kind of rad. But the thing is, no one signaled to me like, okay.
Time to play.
Go. And so I'm also hiding, bathing in the forest silence.
Were you all nude in this story?
No. I mean, close. And then there was like, and then it got really kind of pregnant with what's going to happen. Like the people in the forest were like, is this really what we're doing? And I was like, am I supposed to do something? And finally, like someone down in the valley, like looked up and was like, what the, you know, like, and I stepped out from behind a tree and gave a full on 45 minute long forest concert.
Really?
Playing my acoustic guitar, singing in the trees. Such a Pacific Northwest thing. I can't say whether it was good or not.
Unamplified, unmiked.
That's right.
Just you and the red cedars.
That's right. Just bathing in the nature.
You're saying bathing a lot.
It was a bathing kind of experience.
Concerts and festivals are rarely a bath time vibe, but you like a bath. This must have been your favorite show ever.
I do. It's like, I mean,
why doesn't Coachella have bathing?
I'm like standing in like a patch of salal, and there's moss all around.
Did you have to say like greetings, pilgrims?
Hello. No, I just started like with no announcement.
But I feel like your patter would have to be kind of Middle English or whatever. Here cometh another song.
Yay, unto thee.
Here cometh an antique one. Seeth if thou knowest it.
No, all the songs were just the same, like Capitol Hill indie pop. But
well, I mean, we've done a show about skyscrapers before. I had to Google this. Do you remember another omnibus entry about skyscrapers? So the futurelings of drowned earth know that there were once these spires.
People are yelling at their headphones right now for a variety of reasons.
I cheated and looked. I would not know. It was a you show.
Oh, sure then. I know all of my shows.
In order.
Let's see. It wasn't. No, I can't remember. What was it?
Maybe you're not even going to remember you did this. It was like the helipads of Los Angeles.
Oh, of course.
It was a zoning show.
Of course. I remember.
Everyone loves a good zoning podcast.
Yeah.
They're zoning out.
The thing about the thing about that was, yeah, it's an LA that even people in LA aren't aware of. You have to be in one of the tallest buildings in LA to even see it.
But did we talk about just the tallness of like as a kid, were you in awe of tall buildings?
Yes.
It probably would have been Seattle. Where was the first skyline you actually saw?
Yeah, Seattle. My mom worked in the Safeco building in the University District.
Now UW Tower.
UW Tower, which at the time, if you recall, was the tallest building not only in the U District, but really as far as the eye could see.
For those who don't know, yeah, outside of downtown Seattle, there was nothing, and then there was this one insurance building sticking up next to the university campus.
Which was a proper skyscraper.
It is 325 feet. You know, if you're a New Yorker or a citizen of the world, if you can imagine the Flatiron building, it's roughly the same size, but not a triangle.
No, not a triangle, and it's a brutalist style building.
It's a big poured thing.
But then, at the time in downtown Seattle, the tallest building. This was before the Columbia Tower, before the Green Donkey Dick building.
I like that building.
That's now the that's like Seattle City Hall, basically.
I think it was probably it might have been our best skyscraper. Was it the Rainier Bank building?
It was. Yes. Well, there was the box the Space Needle came in, which was the
Darth Vader building at 4th and...
not that one.
Oh.
The one down...
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Was that taller?
Yeah, I think of it as being the tallest building.
So the Rainier... Like, Seattle had some good-ass skyscrapers in the 70s and 80s, because I don't know what the Rainier Bank building is called now. Rainier Tower or something?
Rainier Tower.
It still has this... It's by the World Trade Center architect who liked these kind of... Orientalist arches and ogees and stuff. And so it's got this inverted pyramid at the bottom where it starts narrow and goes out.
It looks like a pencil sitting on its, or standing like, on
yeah,
its
halfway
point.
Into a sharpener. Yeah. And of course, you can't really put a skyscraper on its point. So it goes down to a slightly smaller footprint than the rest of it. But it was, for a kid, it was pretty eye-popping. It was like you're seeing the Jetsons or the World's Fair.
Well, and what was really nuts was underneath the Rainier Tower, there was a two-story mall.
Yeah.
Like underground.
I think still there.
I tried to get into it the other day, and all the doors were locked, but it was like 1 a.m.
Yeah,
that's, so I feel like maybe that's not indicative.
That's when they don't want scraggly men with beards and no teeth trying to get into it, shake the doors of a downtown mall.
When
they have a system for that.
I used to work at Piper Jaffray, the stock brokerage. And their office was in the old IBM building, which was also designed by the World Trade Center architect.
He did the Science Center. He did quite a bit of the fairgrounds, yeah.
And if you look at the IBM building, which is right above what used to be Benihana, I don't think that Benihana is there anymore.
It's not.
But you look at it with the eye of the World Trade Center, and you're like, oh, my God, it's really like a model of it, a smaller model of it. Impressive. Like, beautiful, beautiful building.
So we had that, and then we had the aforementioned, in the late 70s, they built that Darth Vader building, which had the diagonal top and was pretty cool.
Pretty tricky.
And then that Deco one wasn't there. Oh, but you know, the Smith Tower obviously had been there since 1914 or whenever they built that.
And it was the tallest building west of the Mississippi for decades. Yeah,
and I think even that understates it. Like, I think it was the tallest outside of, like, New York and Philadelphia or something. Maybe there was a Chicago one. But I think maybe at the time they built it, it was pretty much like, for some reason, Seattle had a New York-sized skyscraper, and it's not clear why. The Smith was in the family of the Smith Corona and Smith & Wessons, I think.
Because Seattle is one of the great cities.
It's a vibrant city. Yeah, I guess it was, maybe it was just leftover Gold Rush fervor.
Yeah.
Like Gateway to the North kind of a vibe.
I went to a party in that.
That's got the steeple.
Yeah. It does. I went to a party in that steeple one time, and
Ben Gibbard wrote a song about that steeple.
And there was a party in the Chinese room.
Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah. And
normals can go there.
We knew the woman that owned the apartment because she had gotten it in the divorce from the guy that had purchased the building from Ivor. And somehow I got left alone in the apartment. Everybody was like, oh, let's go downstairs and open another keg. And so...
Were you hiding with a guitar?
I wasn't. I was just standing there, and I was like, wait a minute, I'm all alone up here. And, you know, there's a wrought iron staircase and then a ladder up to the beacon.
Yeah.
And I climbed all the way up there, and the hole to get in to change the light bulb feels like it was hammered out of concrete. Like, I had to squeeze to get through it to a degree that I was uncomfortable, claustrophobic, and scared.
Are there windows up there?
Yeah. Well, then you climb up, and it's like a lighthouse. It's like a Fresnel lens and a huge light bulb. But the owners of the apartment had put a bunch of pillows up there.
So they occasionally did squeeze up?
Yeah. And, well, I mean, they're just smaller than me. I bet it wasn't even a squeeze. Like a normal-sized person. But then once I was up there, I was like scared to go back down through the portal. But I was up there for 20 minutes and nobody...
nobody noticed her.
No, and I was having the time of my life.
Some say he's still up there. The view must have been great.
Incredible. And you're just, you're in a glass bulb on the top of this iconic building I'd looked at my whole life.
This is extremely unrelated, but that reminds me of this thing I just read last night about how when Paul McCartney and Wings played the Kingdome... in the Wings Across America tour. It was the only stadium they played. They were playing arenas otherwise, but they had 60,000 people in the Kingdome. It was brand new. It was still the King County multi-purpose domed structure or whatever it was. And I guess Linda, the photographer, looks up and says, I want to go up there. You know, the equivalent of the Smith Tower, that weird hanging thing. And they were like, well, no, you can't. And she's like, what do you mean? Somebody's got to go up there. There's lights. And they're like, well, yeah, there's a series of stairs and ladders, but no. And she's like, well, let's do it. So like it's an hour before the show. And she's like clambering up to that little, gondola at the top of the Kingdome and taking pictures. Crazy.
Phenomenal.
Skyscrapers were a big deal to me as a kid because maybe just because you're smaller, they seem like... Today we're inured to them. We're like, well, of course, the human race will just build these things. But as a kid, you're like, these are not inevitable. Like, these are crazy. Are these even possible?
It seemed like at some point the style of cities recently, like Seattle has always admired Vancouver for the beauty of its green glass, like high-rise apartments.
They had high-rise condos before we did, yeah.
And so now the vibe is like, let's pack as many... blue glass apartment buildings
into Belltown as possible.
But when we were kids, it was like, there's a skyscraper and then there's one.
Yeah, you knew all seven skyscrapers. Yeah. And that wasn't unique to Seattle. Like for most cities, you knew your four skyscrapers, because what an achievement of the human race to put up this amazing, I don't want to say erection. feet. How about that?
You know that one in Nashville that looks like the Tower of Baradur, whatever? It's like the Sauron's eye is up there. It's really like the ugliest skyscraper in the world. It looks like Batman's hat.
You're going to get letters.
No, I think the people of Nashville recognize that.
They salute their ugly skyscraper.
Like, it's just so weird. Like, Nashville feels like every building should look like the Ryman. And then somebody was like, no, no, no. We want to have to build an evil skyscraper in this town.
Yeah, you've got the good forces of country music, and they must have an equal and opposite reaction.
Yeah.
Dolly Parton's aura of good is radiating out of Pigeon Forge or wherever she is.
Right, exactly. She's like the elf queen of Pigeon Forge.
Yeah, that's Lothlorien.
Yeah.
And then Nashville is Mordor.
What are your favorite skyscrapers?
I mean...
How do you feel about the Sears Tower?
No.
No!
I'm anti the Sears Tower.
I went to the top of the Sears Tower when it was the Sears Tower.
Everyone still says the Sears Tower. Sorry, Willis.
It was incredible up there. Beautiful. I mean, Chicago's such a crazy town.
I like
to
visiting
see.
The top of every... I was in Boston with An Afternoon to Kill, and my son and I had been bored, and after he caught his flight, I just went up to the top of some skyscraper near a hotel, and I was like, oh, why was I not here the whole time?
Right.
Like, because you can just look at it forever.
Forever.
It's a whole city.
Forever.
Just walk around. Do two laps. Do three. Why not?
You have that thing where you look out of the top of a skyscraper and you just stare at the train setness of
it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, plus you're part of you is actively, you know, part of you can zone out and just be like river, but part of you is like, well, hold on. Like if the airport's over there, did we come in on that highway or that, you know, there's a lot of map nerd,
For sure.
Aspect to being on top of a skyscraper.
Oh, because you're fact checking your maps that you carry in your head. Yeah, like me.
Well, it's you kind of are seeing a map. Yeah. It's the closest you can get without blasting into orbit to seeing a map like view is to be at the top of a skyscraper.
And you see the diagonals, which when you're on the diagonals, you're like, I know this is a diagonal, but
yeah.
But like meh. And then you see them like cut
why
across.
Why did they build that street?
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I don't think I realized how big skyscrapers were to me until, weirdly, after 9/11, I started to have a lot of skyscraper-based, like, dreams and surreal dreams and surreal nightmares, but not just like, America, you know. And I wasn't even there. I'd seen the World Trade Center in person maybe once. I think I'd been to the Krispy Kreme across the street in the plaza. I didn't have, like, some New Yorker's emotional connection. I just watched it on TV for an hour. But for years, I had, you know, dreams of like, you know, skyscrapers in danger, you know, something about the fear of heights I had as a kid and also just the love of big buildings. You realize they symbolized something, which I guess is why if you're a terrorist leader, it's why you target them.
I'm sure I've told this story before, but, you know, I went to the top of the World Trade Center on September 1st, 2001.
You got the day wrong? When they,
I did.
When they recruited you, they were like, oh, typo.
I time traveled, but I missed the day.
Yeah, you were like, what day is it?
Damn it.
Oh, it's 10 days from now? Oh, I'm just going to order lunch. Like, no, you still could have warned them, John.
everyone, listen. No, I was living in New York that summer, and I'd been basically, my record label was like, we're going to put your record out. You need to come back to Seattle and get a band together. We're not going to release your record if you're just a guy standing in the forest with an acoustic guitar. Like, you need to be able to tour. And I was like, okay. I mean, I really loved living in New York. And I was like, yeah, I'll come back to Seattle. It's way easier to start a band. I tried to get a band together in New York, and it was just hard. The musicians were great.
Too many bands?
People were nice. No, it was just like practice space. You have to, like, it's all the way over there, and you can only rent it by the hour. And so before I left, I went out to Coney Island, and I rode the
cyclone, or whatever it's called,
and like spent a whole afternoon just riding the cyclone over and over. And then I went to the top of the World Trade Center with my friend Chris.
Windows on the World, or whatever it's called, was called.
Yeah, and they took a picture of us because they're trying to sell you a print at the end. And Chris and I actually stood up there because they tried, you know, they blew up the World Trade Center garage
in the early 90s.
Yeah. And we stood up there and we actually speculated, like, how would you knock this down if you could? Like, you know, what would you do? We didn't think of fly a plane into it. We were like, oh, you know, you would, I don't know what, attach ropes to it. And I forget what we were talking about, but then I got to the bottom and they were selling the photos and Chris had made this like hideous face. And I said, why did you make a hideous face? And he was like, well, I'm not going to buy the picture. And I was like, what if I was going to buy the picture?
Have you ever in your life bought the picture?
No, but Chris...
We bought the picture for the first time a couple of weeks ago, and I was against it, but the kids really wanted the picture. So.
What was the picture of?
We were like swimming in a like cenote in Mexico.
We did. Chris and I had been... at that same summer, we'd ridden every roller coaster in New Jersey.
Mm.
We made it like a goal, like every roller coaster... because New Jersey's got a lot of roller coasters.
Sure. There's and, Six Flags there.
Yeah. And we did actually get a picture of us going down the big... the big roller coaster at the Six Flags.
You didn't take it on your flip phone. You've actually bought the...
It was, yeah. We bought it because we looked hilarious, and I still have it. It's right around here somewhere, here in the bunker.
Somewhere.
Yeah, one mile.
The, well, I mean, I always liked the World Trade Center, honestly. Oh, this is not great building. This is not nostalgia. Like, it was the tallest building in the world for a while. And, well, that's what we're going to talk about. It's cool just looking. The progression of what the world's tallest building was and what that meant. And when I say that things can be or not be buildings, that's relevant here because somebody has to adjudicate what's the tallest building in the world. What's a...
Is it a radio tower?
Yeah, is it a tower? Is it an observation tower? Is it a TV? Is it a TV mast or antenna? What part of the building is a spire and what part is a TV antenna? And this goes back to, you know, for thousands and thousands of years... the tallest man-made thing on Earth was the Great Pyramid of Giza from, you know, that was built 4,500 years ago. So from 2600 BC to literally the 14th century, unbroken reign as the tallest structure on Earth. But is it a building? It's
right.
It was built. I was when we were in Mexico the other day, they're showing off their fancy pyramids, and I'm thinking these people had never considered the idea that you might want to be inside a building. These are just stacks.
Yeah,
they've invented the stack, basically. And if you start from a very wide base, you can make a very tall stack. And that's very impressive in ancient Sumeria or the Mayan Empire.
A tall stack is impressive now.
I love a good tall stack.
I used to have a tall stack of books here, but they got put away.
But we were treating these things... Oh, I hate that.
My sister, jeez.
But we treat these things like buildings, and nobody really mentions, hey... what's inside there? Should we go inside there?
Well, you can go inside Giza, down there into some scary cavern.
There are a couple, yeah, there's a couple ventilation shafts. There's a couple galleries, one with a pretty decent sized arched roof. It's not a residential structure, at least for the living. Like, they were built as tombs and monuments. And of course, a whole necropolis a city would spread out around them because they became centers of, both during and after the construction, they became, you know, local population centers. So it is kind of funny. They were the skyscrapers of their time, but there's not a lot going on there.
The pyramids in Mexico don't have...
gooey centers?
Yeah, rooms in them?
No, not a lot going on
there.
They're
just stacks.
I mean, things could be placed there while they were building the stacks.
Right.
But they're just stacks. So, you know, to the degree that a building has to be a residential space that you can go inside and occupy, the Great Pyramid of Giza, even though it was the tallest thing on Earth for... whatever I said, for almost 4,000 years, you know, is it really a building? It's 450 feet tall, but in its day, it was 481 feet tall. The Great Pyramid is 30 feet less great than it used to be.
That's a lot of less great. How did it lose 30 feet?
Some is erosion. Like, you know, in 4,000 years, a mountain can lose a few feet, so why not a fake triangle mountain, as I call pyramids?
Is it true that it was once covered with shiny, polished marble?
Yeah, they had like lime. It wasn't marble, but it was white limestone or something, and it was beautiful. And the top was actually a cap called the Pyramidion. I think now the top of the pyramids is pretty flat because this pointy cap has been picked away over the years. So it's a combination of erosion and bad tourists.
Bad tourists.
Have taken 30 feet off the pyramid. But 481 feet, again, that's taller than the Smith Tower. You know, if you can imagine something that size in downtown Seattle, it would wipe out a whole neighborhood because the base is huge.
I mean, but I've seen the one in Vegas.
The one in Vegas is maybe not life-size, right?
Oh, is that right? Like anything.
Their Sphinx is bigger, weirdly.
Hmm.
Oh, you were just in Vegas, right? You've seen a little Rome and a little Paris. And a little,
I did, New York City.
A little
City.
Venice, a little New York.
Yeah.
You can travel the world there. It's amazing. Do you remember at some point the Postal Service put out a stamp of maybe the Statue of Liberty, but they accidentally used a photo of the little one at New York, New York?
I don't remember
and
that.
And nobody found out till it was already like on the streets. And somebody was like, hey, you can tell. That's not the real...
The person that made it had to surely know.
Oops. Do you think they were pranking?
I don't know. That seems like quite a prank.
Can you imagine if a postal employee was disgruntled?
And just like, here's my gag.
Yeah. Instead of buying a gun, he's like, I'm putting the wrong thing on the stamp. Take that, boss.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
So all over the, you know, in the millennia that the Great Pyramid of Giza stood there getting gradually a few feet shorter every century or couple centuries, you know, big things were built elsewhere. Rome and Greece were pretty terrible at it, honestly.
Like, yeah, they kind of just built like things that were what, 5 stories tall, 4 stories tall?
Do you think it's because they knew psychologically the pyramid was there and they were never going to beat that?
I mean, it's a bad thing to build in a pre-existing city.
I guess that's true.
If you had to go out into the countryside, I mean, it's probably like a squandering of resources.
But all across Asia, oh, for sure. But all across Asia, people were building, I mean, not taller than Giza, but pyramid scale, great pyramid scale temples and pagodas and ziggurats and,
right,
you know, all the rest. I guess the stupas. I guess these were out in the middle of nowhere.
You know what? I think that big monumental structures like that are kind of anti-democratic. And Greece was trying to be, like, they weren't building big monuments to autocratic emperors. They were building, galleries of all the gods.
They gave us democracy.
Yeah.
I see.
And then the Romans, you know, were trying to figure it out.
I mean, everybody has this cultural memory of the Tower of Babel story, which is in a lot of Near Eastern memories. And it probably based on some actual ziggurat that was blowing people's minds at some time.
Right.
But there is the idea that there is something bad about building the big building, that it's hubristic.
Right.
And again, if you're the Pharaoh, you're like, yeah, absolutely it is. Let's make mine higher. But you're right. If you're the Greeks or the Romans, you're like, no. Like, this is a bad look. The gods would be affronted.
If you think about the ancient wonders, like there's the statue of Zeus. Oh, the Colossus of Rhodes, right? Is a big colossus.
The lighthouse, interestingly, the Pharos at Alexandria might actually count as a building.
Oh, sure.
I mean,
you climb up in it.
It's a tall thing with stairs. I mean, it's more like an observation tower than a, I don't know if anybody.
Right, it's a tower.
Is there a Smith Tower style apartment at the top where Ben Gibbard hangs out?
I mean, they had to keep the light lit.
Yeah, so somebody there was probably a keeper somewhere. Yeah. Anyway, like it's not taller than the pyramid, but it's like co-existent at the same time as the pyramids, and it's a tall building. But we don't, you know, if you eliminate the pyramids, it's really impossible to say what was the tallest building, a residential building on Earth at any given time. You know, tower, right. brick and stone tower blocks would gradually get higher and higher over the centuries. The thing that finally surpassed the Great Pyramid, as you will probably not be surprised to hear, in the 14th century, was a cathedral.
Right.
It was a series of cathedrals then for 400, 500 years. And
again, basically temples.
Definitionally, is it a residence?
Now, wait, how deep was Cappadocia? Could a building be tall by virtue of digging down?
I mean, they generally measure a building. I think today when they canonically measure the heights of skyscrapers, foundations and basements are ignored. You know, it's the street end, the street level entrance. So I guess, no, that's the worst building. This building's negative 100 feet tall. This building sucks. Cappadocia is like a step backwards, gentlemen.
So I just looked it up. And, you know, I heard the other day from someone, they were like, you know, we can hear when you're typing on Omnibus.
So when you're like, if memory serves, tap, 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 tap.
But it says here, having looked it up, I'm now going to confess every time I type something in, Cappadocia was 280 feet deep. So not nothing.
No, that's pretty great.
Yeah.
280 feet deep.
Yeah.
That is the height of the Flatiron Building, except
the height of the Smith Tower deep?
Basically.
Whoa.
Maybe I'll use my bell for when you type, just so people know that you don't know this stuff. I'll be like, ding, 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 ding. He's still typing. Still typing.
It's kind of like a Breaking Bad style bell.
I don't have a use for my bell. Like, if my bell is for when you make a pun, that's why it's all cobwebby. Like, I'm still waiting for the first.
Yeah, that's right.
The first pun.
What's the use case?
So cathedrals are the same kind of a, you know, by modern definitional standards, they're the same kind of a gray area. They are a building, but they're not for living in. There's usable space at the bottom, but then, you know, we just use whatever technology we have, whatever arches and buttresses are available to us to make this big empty space with no usable floors.
Right.
Does that count? I mean, kind of from the outside today, you would be like, absolutely, that's a building.
Is the Parthenon not as tall as a cathedral?
The Parthenon in Athens? Or the Pantheon in Rome?
I'm sorry, the Pantheon.
Yeah, because the Pantheon maybe was the highest thing in Rome in its period. And it is not, you know, it's tall and impressive by ancient standards. It is not medieval cathedral tall. When the Great Pyramid was finally superseded, when the Lincoln Cathedral in Lincolnshire, about the same time, they built Old St. Paul's Cathedral in London, and in Lincoln, they built the Lincolnshire Cathedral. I think maybe London's was, there's a whole thing where, does the building take over when it opens or when it's taller? Because obviously buildings get taller before they open.
Right.
So London had a taller building than Giza before Lincolnshire did, but maybe Lincoln Cathedral opened first. Their heights are both disputed, but they're probably around 525 feet. So they're
disputed even still.
Yes. There are multiple accounts. And then there's people saying, here's some revisionist evidence that the 524 foot figure is wrong, but it's attested from multiple places that Lincoln Cathedral was bigger than, was taller than the Great Pyramid.
Can't just any dork stand on the ground with a laser pointer now and know exactly how tall they are?
Well, the problem is the spire that exceeded the height of the Great Pyramid of Giza collapsed in a fire in 1549.
Oh, yeah.
So Lincoln That'll Cathedral happen. Was only the tallest structure on Earth. And again, this is the beginning of the controversy over which part of the Sears Tower, for example, do we measure to? Which part of the One World Trade Center do we measure to? You know, in addition to the towers, it's got this spire,
yeah,
which is to awe us with the, you know, its towering presence and make us think of the heavens, but it's not really a usable part of the building in any sense.
When the Lincoln Cathedral was built, which is what, medieval 1100?
Yeah, yes, let me see, the 1300s. Late medieval period.
Would they have been aware of the height of the Great Pyramids of Giza?
Okay,
no,
that's the interesting question. You know, you go through the centuries and you see, well, when the Lincoln Spire collapsed, then there's like 400 years where things shorter than the Lincoln Cathedral are the tallest building on Earth. And they're all just random European cathedrals. One in the Hanseatic city of Stralsund was just left the tallest thing on earth when the spire fell down in Lincoln?
I have never been to Strassland.
No, I think today it's like the fifth biggest city in its state. You know, it's not a...
Never heard of it.
I wonder if the cathedral is even still there. Then Beauvais, France. Then we get into cathedrals that are still big and standing. Strasbourg, then Hamburg, then Rouen, then Cologne. And I think finally a church in Ulm. But so for 400, I think Cologne, or maybe Ulm is the first one when it's built in 1890 that's actually taller than the spire of Lincoln Cathedral is said to have been. But for these hundreds of years, I think for the most part, the people living, working, and praying in these cathedrals had no idea that they were in the tallest building on earth. This is all retrospective history and architecture. We care now in a Guinness Book of World Records way that they didn't, because they were just trying to eat enough sorghum to stay alive through the winter.
Right. There wasn't even a sense of the right world. It would have been the tallest cathedral. Would they have done it?
Did they know, like, the pyramids existed? Most right of them. Who? It's probably a bunch of dumb Kevins who are like, what's a pyramid?
But like, did Ulm and Munich have a competition to see whose cathedral was taller?
I spent some time trying to find the earliest references I could find to our cathedral is bigger than your cathedral. Our cathedral is bigger than the pyramid. And it seems to be in the, like, maybe, I'm limited to English language resources here, and England no longer had the tallest cathedral and never would again. But people, in British texts, people are saying this is the tallest in Britain as early as the 1700s.
Oh.
So there seems to be some local awareness of, like, the biggest cathedral is Salisbury. But if you go to the continent, the biggest cathedral is. But as far as what was the biggest on earth, I don't think that
existed until the airplane.
I think what ruined it was probably Americans.
Yeah, America, woo, ruining things since 1800.
In 1884, America built the Washington Monument in an Egyptian style.
In an attempt to build the tallest thing in the world?
Yes, or at least it was well known that in building this thing to George Washington, we were going to make it bigger than any of the cathedrals of Europe, any of the temples and tombs of antiquity.
Eat it.
Yeah, and... the Washington Monument, again, a structure, but not a building.
Right.
It was finished in 1884, and it was taller than any cathedral. Now,
taller than the Great Pyramids of Giza?
Yes. At the time the Lincolnshire Spire fell, all these other cathedrals were still taller than Giza. So all those other cities, Strasbourg and Rouen and Cologne, they all had the tallest building in the world.
Right.
All taller than Giza, although who knows at what point they became aware of this. But it was the USA saying, this is a thing.
We're doing
this. This is going to be a list, and we're going to have the tallest building. Because George Washington, obviously, you know, he deserves it. He shouldn't have a building shorter than Cologne Cathedral. Come on.
Did you ever walk to the top of the Washington Monument, climb the stairs?
I've never done it.
Because I did.
I've never even gone up in the... Yeah.
And I got to the top and it was gnarly. That was maybe one of the hardest, like, just straight dumb climbs I ever did. I got to the top, I wanted to barf.
Plus, underwhelming once you get to that little top, right?
Well, the whole climb is underwhelming. There's just nothing to see or do. It's just an arduous, like, task. And it was the summer and just hot and, ugh, what a barfy thing. And I heard now that you can't do the walk. You can't climb the stairs. You have to take the elevator.
Yeah, I don't know. Is that a 9/11 thing?
Who knows anymore?
I think every time I'm in one of those towers, kind of from that, like the Monument to the Great Fire in London is the same way. You go up a bunch of stairs, and then you're, at the time, you were probably in the tallest thing around that wasn't the cathedral, and you were like, hey, we can see the river from here. I can see my house.
Right.
I can see Eel Pie Island. But now, you know, you're something the same height as a five-story office block, and you're like, why did I walk up
boring
here? Now I have to walk back down. And I paid like 11 pounds or 14 euro or whatever this building was.
When we were at the top of the Eiffel Tower, I saw a door to the stairs, and I was like, I'm going to walk down. And everybody was like, boring. And I was like, no, it's going to be cool.
Can you walk down?
I walked all the way down the stairs and it took forever. I thought, it's not that tall.
It's so tall. it was the tallest structure on earth.
Like for an hour, I'm just walking down these wrought iron stairs like herp-a-derp-a-derp.
In your head, did you think it would be like 15 minutes?
Yeah. I'm kind of like, you walk down the stairs. How hard can it be? But it's an incredible trip. You know, you're walking through the Eiffel Tower. You're walking down the legs of it.
And you can see the whole view, right? Yeah. You're just surrounded by some kind of lattice work.
Yeah, you're out.
It's not enclosed.
Essentially outside.
I feel like I would be scared. A lot of movies I saw as a kid kind of informed my post 9/11 nightmare. Superman 2, the scene at the Eiffel Tower, because movies always had very scary things happening on precipices in tall buildings.
Yeah, it was scary. I mean, you know, that's wrought iron. It doesn't make you feel like this is confidence inspiring, but it was great. I mean, it's great. And I don't know, some of those things, it's just like we're talking about, like we're nerds and the nerdiness expresses itself in different ways. Like I'm going to go down the stairs instead of the elevator, like all the snorks. And then it's like, well, now I've committed to this.
I wonder if part of it is that the Eiffel Tower doesn't give you a sense of its scale because there's nothing else on Earth that looks like that.
I think that's
like
right.
If you were in a skyscraper that height, you'd be like, oh, shoot, that's like 40 stories or whatever. I'm not going to take the stairs from a 40-story skyscraper.
Well, and I think the idea that it was going to be beautiful, it was going to be a beautiful trip.
Yes.
Made me just forget that it was also going to be like a really long trip down the stairs.
I totally undersold it. The Eiffel Tower is 1,000 feet tall.
What?
It would be the tallest building in Seattle. Columbia Center is only 900.
I had no idea.
Yeah, so because there's nothing to compare it to. It doesn't have the proportions of a skyscraper. It doesn't have the materials of a skyscraper. But it was the tallest structure on Earth. It surpassed the Washington Monument and then became the tallest thing on Earth. And at this point, people started to realize the definition started to diverge. They're like, wait a second. Like, these are not really buildings in any sense. Like, should the Washington Monument have the same? Because tall buildings were also becoming a thing in the same period. In the 1880s, all the innovations that led to the possibility of skyscrapers were coming together at once.
The elevator and the ability to get water to the top, right?
Elevator's huge. Like, I always assumed it was just, once you're building out of steel, once there's an iron core instead of stone and brick, that's what it is. But you're absolutely right. It's the elevator. Like, once a building is more than six stories, nobody wants to walk to those stories, right? And there were in the, 1870s or 1880s, there were five-story buildings built with experimental elevators. And they were like, oh, this is it. Plus electric lighting. A lot of things happened at once to make tall buildings possible.
Electric lighting.
And so I think in 1894, there's a couple buildings that are like roughly the height of the Washington Monument that are actual buildings. The Philadelphia City Hall, the Singer Building in New York City. Some buildings in New York City you'd still remember. The MetLife building. Mm-hmm. Not MetLife Tower, the old Pan Am building, but it's the one you see from Union Square that has the clock. Yeah, that's a beautiful old building. So that dates back to the 19th century, that building. The Woolworth Building. At the same time, bigger structures are possible that are not skyscrapers. Your Washington Monuments, your Eiffel Towers. The age of radio and TV means these super tall
towers.
Antennas are getting built. So like an Oklahoma might have a TV mast that's taller than any skyscraper in Manhattan. Should that count? Who's counting? What's this even for? You know,
have you ever known anybody that lived in a fifth floor walk up in New York? It's so brutal.
Fifth floor walk-ups?
There are.
That's got to be the top of
it. Is fourth floor walk up is most common, but that I mean, and even those are just like,
can you imagine?
Tromp with your groceries.
With your little cart or
just
whatever.
So lame. And I think a lot of times what it does is it makes people shut-ins because they just stay in their apartment. They're like, ugh, I could go down, but then I have to come back up.
Well, yeah, and then they get found, a month later with their cats eating them. So the 20th century, this diverges, this idea of what's the biggest building, what's the biggest structure.
When they built the Eiffel Tower.
And it's rarely the same thing.
When they built the Eiffel Tower, did they do it intentionally to be the biggest building?
Yeah, the Washington Monument was a nifty 554 feet. I think it's supposed to be 555 and 5/12 of an inch. I don't know why.
Because of the Masons.
Because the Illuminati.
Yeah.
George Washington's ghost was like, make it a weird number. He's wearing weird regalia.
So the Eiffel Tower was like, we're doubling that.
Basically, yeah. It's not even close. And it was the same thing. It's always a world's fair. And yeah. I think that's what the Eiffel Tower was. But the idea that there's a competitive angle, which kind of was born with the construction of the Washington Monument to stick it to Europe, that really became a race and a story and a narrative that the common man reading the paper was aware of. That kind of happened in 1930 in New York City.
I can see.
Pretty famous story of the building of the 40 Wall Street, at the time the Bank of Manhattan building. At the same time, the Chrysler Building was being built. And there were these two warring architects who had been formerly partners. William Van Allen designed the Chrysler Building. Craig Severance invented the Bank of Manhattan Building. Designed the Bank of Manhattan Building. And Severance was terrified that the Chrysler Building was going to be higher. And then what's the point of building this slightly shorter building?
Right.
So he keeps adding floors to his plan as the Chrysler Building keeps rising. So these guys are keeping secrets across town.
Like adding floors to that green pyramid on the top, or adding floors in the middle?
I think as it's being built in the middle, it's like, okay, no. Well, no, we can go. Yeah, we can go six more. Yeah. Okay, that'll do it, right?
Right.
So like as the project, the blueprints are changing as it's being built. And then, of course, the coup de grace here, Van Allen had a trick up his sleeve. He had not told anybody the Chrysler Building was going to have its famous deco spire.
Right.
And in fact, they constructed it secretly inside the scaffolding of the tower as they built it.
And then raised it up like a ballpoint pen?
Yeah, and then raised it up overnight with a series of weird derricks. And then Severance was screwed. He was like, they got me.
Well, what's funny is the Chrysler Building is undeniable.
That's my favorite skyscraper.
Right.
And I know it's pretty basic.
But. And 40 Wall is like, would be very impressive in Seattle, but in New York, it's a little blocky. It doesn't have vibe.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got more vibe than a glass box, but compared to the Chrysler Building, good lord.
And maybe at the time it was the glass box of its time, you know, it was just a replacement level skyscraper of 1930s tech.
But down at the bottom, it's like fatter. It's got a big butt and it cannot lie.
Unlike the Rainier Bank Tower with its sleek,
tiny butt,
Asian curves. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is what leads to the controversy, because Severance, the Bank of Manhattan Building, 40 Wall Street, is pissed because the spire is cheating.
Oh.
Like, oh yeah, they were just hiding it and they put it. That's not a building. You can't go inside there. There's no office space. You just put a stick on your building to say it's higher. You can't go to the top of a mountain and just build a stack of rocks and say the mountain got bigger.
You know, that's a good idea.
Although you can.
If Mount Rainier built a 95-foot tower, it'd be taller than Mount Whitney, and then California could stuff it.
I think you've pitched this before and I say, no, it wouldn't count.
It wouldn't count.
Well, I don't know.
What if it was like a rock?
Made of earthworks?
What if a pile of rocks? What if we just carted a pile of rocks to the top of Mount Rainier and just made it taller than Mount Whitney? Because that's such an insult. Mount Whitney has no claim.
We should just say, this seems problematic and expensive, but if we just said that to get a permit to climb Rainier, you had to bring up a foot of rocks
in your pockets
and just kind of dump it when you got to the top
over the course of 50 years,
it would be like the bodies on top of Everest, but it would be, it would be good. It would make it taller.
Well, you know what we could do? We could have people's names engraved on the rocks.
Yeah. You could sell
and sell them.
Yeah. That's great. I think we should do this. This was all rendered moot within a couple of years when the Empire State Building was built.
The big daddy.
Because that blew them out of the water at over 1,200 feet. But I think this idea lingered that somebody needed to decide how tall a building actually was. That you couldn't just leave it to the hucksters and the architects, because they would do tricks like the Chrysler Building did.
This seems like the beginning of a commission.
Yes. In fact, and you can probably guess where it happened, at Lehigh University in Pennsylvania.
Oh, that was my first guess.
That's the kind of place where a lot of mid-20th century things happened, some weird think tank. It probably looks like the Lumen headquarters in Severance. So I guess there was a guy on the Lehigh campus who was a structural engineer and one of the world's leading authorities on tall buildings. And he founded what still exists today as the Council on Tall Buildings and Urban Habitat, or Kutuba.
Oh, the Kutuba.
I don't know why.
The Kutuba from Lehigh.
The name was not chosen, I guess, for the acronym. But so they were in charge of stuff like this. And it became an issue when Toronto built the CN Tower. They were proclaiming that it was the world's tallest building. But
is this a thing where other countries have to sign off on the authority of this institution?
Are you putting this on Instagram?
Yeah, well, no, not my Instagram. The last time I did an Instagram of the bunker, you said, why don't we put those on the Patreon, the Omnibus Patreon.
Well, I think I didn't know you were taking a picture, so I'm all like doing something weird with my mouth, and you're like, ha ha, this is my Instagram.
So now I'm going to like document the bunker for our Patreon.
It looks like you're doing enough pictures that we could do a full 3D render. Like people are going to see your laundry hanging there.
Don't tell people there's laundry in the bunker.
You got an Italian woman across the ravine hauling in her laundry. Buonasera, John. Giovanni. No, you do not hang your clothesline across the ravine. That would be a good idea, though.
Oh, I'm sure some neighborhood association would fine me $50 a day.
So this outfit, you know, in Lehigh, Pennsylvania, until it relocates to Chicago, is kind of in charge of certifying this stuff, or at least they'll give you a certificate. And if you so the CN Tower can't really say they're the world's freestanding structure. In general, the CTBUH tends to punt on questions like this and just create multiple categories.
Well, what the hell is the point of them if they're just punting?
Well, they don't want to get Toronto and or Manhattan or Chicago mad at them.
But this was at a time when America could just arbitrarily start some group and the rest of the world would be like, "Oh,
I guess.
Okay,
it's
America
in Lehigh, Pennsylvania."
So. Yeah.
I don't know where that is. Probably a government contractor. Because what happened, you know, the Empire State Building was exceeded in 1971, I want to say, when the World Trade Center opened, which was the tallest building, which is why it gets climbed in the Jessica Lange King Kong movie. Because the Empire State Building had recently been dwarfed. It would have been weird to have the second tallest building in the world being climbed when everybody was abuzz about the hot new one. And then by the Sears Tower, now the Willis Tower, whenever that opened. And that was kind of a steady state. Like I think you and I were kind of raised in a world where for 20 years, the Sears Tower was just widely assumed to be not just the tallest building on earth, but it kind of always had been and always would be. It seemed almost like a permanent fixture.
I think I'm just old enough to remember when the World Trade Center was the tallest building in
when
the
it
world.
Got beaten.
And we were kind of offended just generally that Chicago would be like, no, it's us. And it's like, what?
They've got big shoulders.
They do, but it just felt a little bit like, because wasn't there a tower that made the Sears Tower taller than the World Trade Center? Wasn't it like a radio antenna?
So in general, what happens is the Council on Tall Buildings and Urban Habitat will create new categories to avoid having to make some ruling that will piss off an entire city, state, corrupt Democratic mayor, whoever they're scared of in these stories.
Did 40 Wall have a taller place than the Chrysler Building?
Yes.
It did.
The tallest. So for centuries, the standard had been the highest inhabited. I think it was the highest architectural element. That's what you would use in a cathedral.
Architectural element.
And then it became, well, maybe it should be the highest occupied floor, because in that case, 40 Wall is higher than the Chrysler Building if you get rid of the spire. The spire is an architectural element, but then the Empire State Building built that big antenna, which was originally, you probably remember, a dirigible docking port.
Right.
Because they thought people would just want to, I guess, walk on a catwalk.
Out to a blimp?
Atop the highest building on Earth to a combustible blimp. It seems like a terrible idea. I think it had happened once as a publicity thing during construction and then never again.
Right.
But, you know, now there's a radio antenna. So do you count, is an antenna the same as a spire? The spire is at least part of the vibe of the building. You could take a building like the Sears Tower that's effectively done and then just put a radio antenna on it and say, hey, my building just got 120 feet taller.
Right.
So what happens is the CTBUH creates three categories, highest occupied floor, the highest spire, and then what's the other one? I think roof used to be the other one, and now it's roof. Now it's just like the highest point, including masts, because, you know, roof is no longer a thing. You know, skyscrapers don't have flat roofs often anymore.
Right.
And so they keep three categories. And they keep other categories too. Like, I guess Oslo has a 9-story building or something that has a CTBUH plaque down below because it's the world's tallest timber building. The Norwegians have built a skyscraper entirely out of wood.
Isn't there one in Chicago that's the world's tallest brick?
Oh, probably.
Building where the walls on the ground floor are like 15 feet deep because it's like just a huge pile of bricks.
Yeah. And that's the kind of thing that they would certify separately. And I think, you know, there's really not an upward limit. You know, you can just keep making the base wider and digging downward. There's no real theoretical upper limit on how high a skyscraper can even be.
Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously logistical issues. you know, there's wind. But today they get around that with a thing called, I think it's a TMD, a tuned...
Oh, they tune dampers.
Modal damper of some kind. Yeah. Have you ever seen a picture? It's just some weird, like, occult, like this giant sphere on springs, like it's a Foucault's pendulum or something.
Down in the basement, right?
Yeah, well, it can be anywhere. Like, it could be in the middle. I think sometimes it's higher up. Because what it does, it's on springs in such a way that it resonates in the reverse of whatever the building's doing.
Right.
So I think in some cases it can actually be higher up. And so we're getting into the age where, because there's no theoretical limits, and as you point out, these things can be a salute to an autocrat, just as they were back in the times of the pharaohs, in an era where there is a race to have the world's biggest building, there becomes prestige, and now these become a public good. The world's biggest building can be a marketing campaign, a tourism campaign. It can be a kind of soft cultural power, even for a non-superpower.
Right, especially for a non-superpower, right? Because it indicates, like in Dubai, is it Dubai or Abu Dhabi?
Currently Dubai.
Dubai, like, what the hell is the economy there? There isn't one except for resource extraction.
And the funniest thing is that there's no real estate crunch. In Manhattan, the buildings got high because they had to. That was very valuable land.
Right.
In Dubai, you could literally build anywhere, and yet they're building this... what is it, 2,700-foot building?
So, and all reports are, if you fly into Dubai in the night, all those buildings are lit up and the floors are just empty. All the skyscrapers in Dubai, there's nobody in them because why would there be?
Yeah, there's a real occupancy problem in a lot of these super talls and megatalls, which is that, you know, close to street level, yes, that's you want, you know, people want that valuable real estate, storefronts, and then offices above them. And up at the top, that's valuable real estate as well, because there's observation decks and restaurants and the prestige of, well, we're on the 120th floor. But I guess it's impossible to sell the middle third of any of these. Like all these, you know, whether it's an iconic Empire State Building or not, or some weird building in Malaysia, it's very hard to sell this real estate in the middle.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of them are now planned with hotels in mind.
Right.
You know, you just have
the middle 60 floors.
Yeah, just like 60 floors of a Four Seasons above the offices and below the observation stuff.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
But you know, it was not the Burj Khalifa that surpassed the Sears Tower. There were a series of these kind of local pride projects.
The Kuala Lumpur.
Exactly, yeah. From 1998 to 2004, it's the Petronas Towers in Kuala Lumpur. Then passed from 2004 to 2010 by Taipei 101 in Taiwan.
Oh, that's a weird looking building.
And those are cities with, you know, with expensive real estate markets where, you know, it may pencil out to build a super tall building, even if you weren't getting the government kickbacks and the inflated rents that you get from the prestige of it. But then from 2010 on, all the contenders are in places where you don't need a big building. You know, the Burj Khalifa in Dubai. It's being challenged by, there's that giant clock tower in Mecca that we will never see without converting. Have you seen this thing?
I would think you could see it.
It's just incredibly wide. It's like, imagine a skyscraper that's basically the height of one of these megatalls, but it's also like, it's also so wide that the scale of it looks like it's a six-story building. Like, this thing's insane.
What's it called?
Is it just the clock tower? Save the clock tower.
In Mecca.
Clock towers.
Clock towers, Mecca.
Yeah, so it kind of looks like it's the scale of Big Ben, except it's the height of, it's taller than Taipei 101.
Wait, that's in Mecca?
Yeah.
What a ridiculous thing.
It looks like it's in Vegas, right? But
yeah, the next biggest building in Mecca is like four stories tall.
Right, because there's no real estate market that would lead you to. And there's another one. There's one in Jeddah that's being built right now. Construction recently re-began on the Jeddah Towers, which was supposed to be finished this year, but there was a five-year interregnum, as we say, if that's what you can call it, when a Saudi prince kills a bunch of his...
We do call it that.
Kills and imprisons a bunch of his family members and leads to a lot of contractors going out of business.
Isn't a big clock tower... I'm no imam.
We're always saying that on this show. Just, again, the usual disclaimer applies. John is not an imam. If he starts singing in the woods, you do not have to climb a... You don't have to face Mecca.
But wouldn't you say...
You just have to sway gently.
Isn't there some sort of way of looking at this clock tower as an
affront to Allah?
Yeah, an affront to Allah. What the hell? Why a clock? Right? What does Allah say about clocks?
It helps you know what time it is to pray. You and I are not from religious traditions with strictly regimented prayer times.
I see. You're right about that.
That actually comes into play in the Burj Khalifa. Mindy went to Dubai and went up the Burj Khalifa and does not recommend it.
How did I not know this?
She had a Pakistani American friend of hers married into, I think, Saudi money.
Okay.
And now has a very nice Emirati home.
Well, this is something that she and I are going to talk about at the next cocktail party.
New Mindy lore just dropped.
What?
Well, because Mindy always has these fun stories about eating amazing homemade Pakistani food. But then her high school friend... married a Saudi prince or something.
Wow. Okay.
He's not royal family. He just has a nice petro job. And so they have a nice house for their abundant kids. So Mindy goes to Dubai and there's nothing to do in this created city, obviously. So she's like, well, I'm going to go up the Burj Khalifa.
And it was not fun?
Well, I guess she says, the elevators go 40 miles an hour or something. So you get crammed in to this elevator, because it's one of the few attractions that you get crammed in, so you're in this uncomfortable, tight elevator, which then blasts off at a speed that kind of creates vertigo and or nausea.
Right, your ears pop.
Yeah. And then you get to the top, and really your view is of... no offense to our Emirati listeners.
There's the Gulf.
You can see the created, because they built those created islands and peninsulas in the Gulf.
Yeah, one looks like Mickey Mouse and one looks like Michael Jackson.
That's right. It's the Vegas of the Arabian Peninsula. I was like, well, so do you regret going up? She's like, no, at the top they sell milk chocolate made with camel's milk in the shape of a camel.
Okay.
So I bought that. I was honey, sure. I'm pretty sure they had those at the airport too. You didn't have to get blasted into the air.
Did she feed that to you at some point?
I think she was like, this is a good souvenir. The kids will think this is fun.
Right.
So the kids ate camel's milk chocolate when she got home. But, this building, which is so big, you can't take a photo of it. You can't commemorate your journey because it's too enormous.
No camera can do it.
It leads to religious problems because the sun sets at different times depending on what floor you're on.
Okay.
And if you're a Muslim, like a lot of the tenants are, that affects when you can break your Ramadan fast.
Whoa.
So they've had to have, is it imams? Who are the lawgivers? Oh, it would be an imam, not a muezzin. Sorry, I was mistaking the two. It's an imam that would have to rule on when you can eat dinner at different floors.
Can't you imagine that Ramadan would be sort of a cascading? Because that would be true if you were a Muslim on the other side of the world, right? I mean, it's just the same.
Iftar dinner moves across the earth, but in this case, iftar dinner moves up. If you're at the base, you can eat 2 minutes before people on the 80th floor, and 3 minutes before people on the 130th floor, because you take an elevator to the top and the sun's still up.
Right.
So those people are still waiting. Forks poised above delicious souvlaki, probably not a Greek food.
Pretty phenomenal.
Delicious shawarma. There we go. It's the building so tall, it's created theological problems and other infrastructure problems. There were rumors in the West about how Dubai didn't actually have a central sewage system, so trucks were emptying this giant skyscraper. And that's not actually true. What was true is that the city's sewage system could not handle the load of a building that big. So occasionally you would need truck backup.
Because if you pooped at the 100th floor, it's going to, by the time it gets to the bottom, it's going to reach terminal velocity.
It's going to be traveling at the speed of light.
Right.
It could pass clean through you and kill you. That's what happens in the Mission Impossible movie. Tom Cruise puts on suction cups, goes to the top of the Burj Khalifa and poops on his enemies.
So actually, like, at if you dropped something from the top of the Burj Khalifa, it would reach terminal velocity?
Yeah, but have you ever actually read the debunkings on this? It's very boring. It turns out air resistance...
Oh.
For, you know, if you're just dropping a penny, air resistance means it falls at some annoying speed. And if you hit somebody, they would go, hey...
This feels like a Mythbusters episode the boring 25% or the boring 49%.
I'm sure they were dropping so many pennies on each other from platforms.
Hey!
So if the Jeddah Tower is completed, and again, workers are back at work as of a couple months ago, that will be a kilometer tall. It will dwarf the Burj Khalifa. And there were plans in Tokyo for the Sky Mile Tower, which would have been a mile high. And that's something that people have tossed around for a long time, especially Americans who are not beholden to the metric system. Sorry, by the way, to everybody, all the Canadians listening to us quote these heights in feet, including your beloved CN Tower.
I would think that China would be way into this game, but maybe
there's
they're...
a Shanghai building in the top four. There's a bunch of, you know, I think China is always a numbers game. You know, they're not going to beat you with the best political system.
They're going to build 60.
They just have so many. Yeah, we don't have the biggest city. We just have 99 of the 110 biggest cities.
What about the all these needle buildings that are being built for Russian oligarchs in New York City?
They're so terrible.
They're really terrible and weirdly much taller than everything
and
else.
And they're just driven by rents. You know, like those buildings only make sense if you could charge a certain amount per square foot. Otherwise, you would never build anything with a footprint that narrow. But today, people will pay those crazy rents. They're not popular. Oh, there was a great story in the New Yorker last month about one of them that's like tilting and will probably never be finished.
No way.
Yeah. Like it's a good, like they,
that's pretty cool.
They cheaped out on the surveys. And I guess there were two ways to get around the fill they found because it's close enough to the water that it's not good old Manhattan bedrock.
Uh-huh.
There's two ways to get around it. And they chose the cheaper one. Like we don't need to drill, whatever you call the things you pour. We'll just do this cheaper one. And now the building's like at a 0.8 degree angle and will never be finished.
Wah, wah.
As early as the 50s, Frank Lloyd Wright wanted to build a mile high building in Chicago called the Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And he had like, it seems like he had a lot of the logistics worked out, but I think there was also a lot of hand waving because one of his ideas is, the elevators will be atomic powered.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. It's like, it's a two word fix, atomic elevators. With a lot of these super and megatalls, elevator capacity or elevator logistics is the limiting factor.
You have to take an elevator and then get off and take another elevator.
That tends to be the workaround. Yeah. They do that in, a lot of these super talls, they do that. As I was thinking about the tallest building in the world, you know, and the hubris of the Tower of Babel, a lot of these buildings must have lifespans, right? Like, they're steel and concrete. If it was two stories tall, those buildings would get torn down at some point. What do you do when a 102-story building nears the end of its life?
I mean, this is the plot of Escape from New York.
Also, did you have that David McCauley book? So my skyscraper love led me to read these books by this illustrator that had this insanely detailed account of building a medieval cathedral or a highway or... But his one about skyscrapers was actually, the premise was the slightly racist one that the Japanese had bought the Empire State Building and were going to transplant it to Tokyo. Remember that year when everybody was worried about the Japanese just bought Yankee Stadium. The Japanese just bought Marilyn Monroe.
I must have been on drugs at that point because I missed. I mean, I remember.
Maybe you were just not racist enough to know this urban legend.
They were making better cars than we were, and Michael Keaton was mad about it or something. But
there were 60 Minutes pieces about they're coming for all our real estate.
No, I was drunk.
Anyway, so in this book, they deconstruct the Empire State Building from the top down. Huh. And that is, in fact, what the Japanese have done to skyscrapers that don't make sense anymore that need to be rebuilt from scratch. They will not demo them. They'll kind of take them apart from the top down.
We blew up all of our beautiful buildings to build big, crappy skyscrapers.
Yep.
But have we ever dismantled a big skyscraper?
I think a lot of, like, there's a few that are kind of empty and rotting, like in places like New Orleans. And right. I think they're just sitting there crumbling, getting ready to be the background in The Last of Us.
I mean, in Detroit, all those skyscrapers, all the windows are blown out and they're just sitting there, but nobody's torn them down.
Something struck me as I was looking at this list of the tallest buildings on Earth. I remembered, do you know the fact that Mount Everest is not the tallest mountain on Earth because the Earth is not a perfect sphere?
Right.
Not the Mauna Loa one, the Andes one, Chimborazo.
Is the one that sticks furthest out from the center?
From the center of the Earth, right. Because the Earth is an oblate spheroid. It's flat around the poles and bulges at the equator. I kind of am, actually.
Void.
Into my, as I age, into my 50s. I bulge at the equator for sure. And so what that means is, you know, a mountain at the North Pole sticks out into space much less than a mountain of the same size at the equator.
I would say a mountain at the North Pole really doesn't stick out very high.
This is a hypothetical mountain at the North Pole. It's a stack. Santa's got all his presents on So the effect of that is that Chimborazo near the equator sticks out further than... And I wondered, how come no one has applied this to buildings? Like the tallest skyscraper on Earth...
Oh, it's going to be
close to the equatorial, right?
Right.
So I started trying to do the math and realized I had no idea how to figure out what the radius of the Earth was at a given latitude.
Right.
So I did what you do, and I texted Randall Monroe, the XKCD guy.
Right. This is right up his alley.
Like, because I knew he was. And weirdly, he didn't get back to me for a very Randall reason, which is that he was doing the MIT puzzle hunt that weekend. So I didn't hear back from him until he was done with the puzzle hunt. But he sends me this text, and he says, I think it's radius of the Earth equals... radius at equator times 1 minus quantity 1 over 298.257 times the sine of the latitude squared.
Oh.
I think it's that.
Duh.
Oh,
I think
the constant is 298.257? I'm glad you... that probably is some constant of oblateness that... but then he... And he asked me why, and I told him that I, like, well, what's the skyscraper that's actually the tallest? And he reminded me of a fact that I had been too dumb to think of, which is that mountains can all be measured... from sea level, whereas buildings are not measured from sea level. They're measured from their lobby,
right,
which means that the tallest skyscraper on Earth is going to be one that's built on a hill, not one that's closer to the equator.
And which is the tallest hill that a skyscraper is built on?
Well, now there's two answers. The tallest building on Earth, the one that sticks the most out into space, and the one where, as Randall put it, if you moved every skyscraper to sea level at its current location, what would stick out furthest into space? And luckily, there's a clear answer to both, I'm pretty sure, because the I think the second tallest building on Earth at the moment is in Kuala Lumpur, very, very close to the equator. It's not the Petronas Towers anymore. They built something called the it's like the Mandaka 100 something. Tallest skyscraper in Malaysia, so you can hear me typing. The Warisan Merdeka Tower is 2,200 feet. It's 118 stories. And it's practically on the equator. Like the equator almost runs through, well, not really. It runs very close to Singapore, but right there. So if you moved all skyscrapers to sea level, that would stick out into space the most. But the question of what building on Earth has the roof that's closest to space is actually going to be a tiny shack on a mountain.
Oh, right, sure. Weird.
Right, because it doesn't take a very big hill to be taller than tallest skyscraper you can imagine.
It's a four-floor walk-up in Nepal.
It's probably, from what I can tell, I have never been to the Ojos del Salado volcano on the border between Argentina and Chile.
Seems like you've been closer to it than...
I've done a little hiking in the Andes, but this one... If you do this trail on the Chilean side, you get up to 19,000 feet.
Dope.
Which I don't know if... I've been up to 17,000 hiking in the Andes, and it's no picnic.
No, I bet not.
But there's a cabin up there called Refugio Tejos. Like a refugio is like a campsite or a
refuge.
A refuge, yeah. But it doesn't mean a refuge from harm. It's a refuge from the snow. And it's at 19,111 feet, and it's just, I'm sure, just a one-story thing with a, you know, corrugated roof. But that is taller than any skyscraper on Earth by far. I guess you could go up to there and maybe go build a pile of rocks that's taller than that in the Andes.
Or go put a radio tower on top of it.
I'm going to take all your rocks from the top of Mount Rainier, because I'm a Mount Whitney booster. And I'm going to move them all to... some building in the Himalayas that will be named after me and will be taller than Refugio Tejos, the Ken Jennings skyscraper.
And that concludes the world's tallest building. Entry 1444.GE1104, certificate number 51591 in the omnibus. Futurelings, social media is a terrible, 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 terrible force for evil in the world. Whatever promise it once held to be a uniting force, to be a benign place.
Even the whole internet.
The whole internet
turned
now.
Bad.
It's just a bad place. Stay off of it at all costs.
The most utopian thing we could come up with of our generation, and it's now the worst thing. It really bums out anybody old enough to remember the millennial dream of the internet.
Do you remember? Do you remember how excited we were? Oh, it was going to bring peace in our time.
It was going to solve all problems.
Yeah, it was going to make Arab Springs everywhere. And now it's just...
Your pen is so bad, I just broke it.
Why did you break my pen?
Well, I probably shouldn't have been using it to try to open this package.
You know, there are so many knives. Within 3 feet of you, there are like 40 knives. Look right there. There's an Air Force survival knife from Vietnam.
Do you mind if I use it to open a package?
No, of course not. That's what it was made for. That's
really?
What they did in
for
Vietnam.
For opening fan mail?
Yeah, they'd drop into the jungle, and then there'd be all kinds of Amazon boxes.
But also,
there.
Look, I mean, I don't want to badmouth Canada at this tricky geopolitical time when we love Canada, but like their pen just crumbled.
What is that pen from?
The Pan Pacific Hotel in Whistler.
Oh, yeah. Well,
it's a piece of crap.
too bad. I mean, the hotel's okay.
I'm sure the hotel's great, but they need to up their pen game.
Well, anyway.
Oh, it actually worked, by the way. I sacrificed the pen, but I got the tape off.
There you go.
I don't
there
need you your stupid Vietnam mercenary knife you got from Soldier of Fortune magazine.
The pen feels good about its contribution.
About its death. It was a good death.
Well, we know that one good thing about the internet, and I put that in scare quotes, is that that's where you find the Omnibus podcast. And you can also find Ken and myself at our respective names, various places.
Kinda.
If you Google Ken Jennings, what comes up first? Ken Jennings' wealth or Ken Jennings' wife?
If I do it?
Yeah, let's
see.
I'm
rarely Googling my own wife. I think it wouldn't... Let's see, Ken...
Let's see what happens here.
Mine says Ken Jennings Ken Jeopardy.
Jennings...
But these are my own searches. Most people are not Googling Ken Jennings Luchador, but I was trying to remember the name of that Seattle Mexican wrestler I met one time.
Ken Jennings... Well, I can't even spell Ken Jennings.
Let me open an incognito browser and see what the average American...
Yeah, mine says American game show host, and then it says American... Oh, no. Who's that's Ken Jenkins.
I have... Oh, yeah, that guy from Scrubs. I have salary and net worth, and I don't have wife.
Yeah, mine has wife down the
road.
Would
be a good, that would be a good Gen Z t-shirt. I have salary and net worth, but I don't have wife.
Well, anyway, you can do those things if you want to hang out with us online. Ken is active online.
Nah, not...
I'm on Instagram.
Feels like homework.
Yeah, some Ken Jennings Instagram account either followed me or faved me or something, and I went like, oh, maybe I should follow Ken Jennings. And it just seemed like it was
fake?
A bunch. Well, no, it felt like it was your interns. They were like, oh, here's Ken. It was anodyne in a way that if you are genuinely doing a thing, it's not.
I've been putting photos of my dogs up on Instagram, but occasionally Jeopardy will be like, collaborate on this post promoting whatever.
Did you give them the codes? The launch codes?
They do have the launch codes, but they have to ask. Oh. That's how it should work with launch codes.
Yeah, for sure. You should have to ask somebody.
Yeah. I mean, maybe not
like
the
Congress.
Maybe not the president at the moment.
You can email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. And if you say something really praiseworthy of me, there's a 20% chance that Ken will forward me the email. If you say something mean about me, he's very generous about putting it in the garbage and not sending it to me.
I save it for the agenda show.
I appreciate that. You can hang out with futurelings who are all, I mean, universally very smart, except for the one person every once in a while that says something that's dumb. And then Ken goes on whatever futureling site that is, and he straightens them out. Oh, my goodness. You have straightened out some dummies.
Look out. They don't listen to the show anymore. They probably canceled their Patreon.
Yeah.
But I got to yell at somebody, so it all works out.
And most of the futurelings respect that a lot, I think.
They're like, he's yelling at me.
He's yelling. You can send us mail at P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155. Sounds like you've got some mail over there, Ken. What do you got?
Let's see. I wanted to open this one first because it was a mystery. It was spilling rice all over my... my mudroom. And Mindy said, who's sending you rice? Is this like anthrax? It's actually from Catherine, who sent us dodecahedron calendars for 2025.
Oh, we had those in the past.
Do you think she was the one who sent them?
They must. She must. She must have been sending us dodecahedrons.
Unfortunately, May popped off of, let's say, yours.
do they?
So it's been leaking rice.
Is she making these herself? They look kind of homemade.
Yeah, it looks like they've been printed and then... I wonder how you decide which month goes next to which month. January, February, March cluster. Oh, I think these four vertexes are each three contiguous months.
They follow a pattern.
Oh, except maybe they don't. Okay, here's the June, July, August, September is going around the middle. Okay, there is a pattern. We'll need to refill yours with rice though, because what I mostly have here is a box full of rice.
Box full of rice.
So if your phone gets wet,
but you're ready to go. I also feel pretty strongly that you are going to leave that box of rice here. That is now my problem.
I can take it out to your recycling when
That's
I go.
Not a bad
it's
idea.
On the way to my car.
Do you recycle rice?
Well, no, that'll go in the compost, but the cardboard can go in the recycling.
What else do we have mail-wise?
Our friend Peter, who wrote that book called The Malphabet.
Uh-huh.
Sent us a new book called Symbolism, but spelled like the percussion instrument.
Smart.
And each page has a picture of a drum kit and a different two-word phrase. Some of them seem to be... I don't know how he generated them. For example, I just opened it randomly to Voodoo Salad and Philosophy Factory.
Are these like... oblique strategies?
Kind of.
Where we take those things and write lyrics about them?
The back does... okay, the pages in symbolism represent the pauses and rests that our minds take as we contemplate the world around us and try to make sense of it all through music and art and even the smallest observations. So yeah, it does seem like they're creative prompts in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Oh wait, some of them are not two-word phrases. They're just a combination of things. For example, tugboats and bagpipes. Or sea salt and C minor. That one seems not random. That one seems
show
written.
Me the drum kit pictures.
Well, I think it's the same drum kit. Here's your copy.
Oh, one drum kit that just gets used over and over?
I think it's the cover art becomes a glyph for each page.
Oh, I see what you're saying down at the bottom. Oh, yeah, okay. This is a book of... look at this, Ken. Bookmark.
Ace of Hearts.
Ace of Hearts.
I think mine has rice in it, but that's just because of... it was sitting in the mail stack. I have the Ace of Spades. I go first.
Oh, he actually endorsed these to us, and you maybe accidentally gave me the one endorsed to me.
Oh, it was accident. Also, did you know that, do you call it endorsing when an author signs a book?
Is it like
a check? Like he's endorsed it over to you?
He endorsed it.
Here you go. This is your book.
What do you call it?
I would say autographed or signed. I don't know.
Endorsed.
That'd be so funny. Yeah, I'm going to do a book endorsing at Barnes & Noble. thank you so much for the calendars, Catherine, and the books, Peter. Very excited. If you're interested in symbolism or the Malphabet, I'm sure you can Google either symbolism or the Malphabet and find Peter's work.
They're beautifully bound, these books.
Yeah, these are nice.
The last thing I would entreat you to do, futurelings, is to go to patreon.com/omnibusproject and support the show by pledging some... what is effectively a minimal.
It's a minimal amount.
It's a minimal amount.
It can be easily minned.
Especially now that our glorious leader has eliminated the penny. This is the minimum pledge at patreon.com is just a couple of exponents away from the smallest American coin.
And if the dollar collapses, I mean, it's going to be a great deal for our international listeners. We're not going to up the levels.
Yeah, that's right. No, if you're international...
Because we might need a political asylum in your nation soon.
Let me just add that Patreon has changed their policies, and if you pledge through the Apple App Store...
Oh, yeah.
They take
Apple takes
like,
a cut.
Yeah, they take like 30% now, so don't use that. Ha, ha, ha.
Wow, and I forgot
just,
about that.
Yeah, just go directly to patreon.com/omnibusproject. And give us $5 a month. It's hardly even anything. Think about how much that is a year. Not that much. $60?
But it keeps
a year?
But it keeps the lights on here.
Yeah, it really does.
You couldn't take a family of four to the movies for that.
No. I spend that much just on cigarettes. every day. $60 on cigarettes. I don't even smoke them anymore. I just throw them in the toilet.
So if you skipped one day, if you picked one day of the year when you weren't going to buy $60 worth of cigarettes, mm-hmm. you could support Omnibus for $5 a month and get access to the Addenda shows and all the rest.
So much stuff now available to people who pledge to the show.
If all of you have a $60 a day smoking habit, it's very easy.
Yeah, if you're heroin addicts or crackheads, this is a great way to get straight, get clean, just take your crack money. Your heroin money would probably be more.
Right. That's what we'd like.
And give it to
your favorite podcast.
Patreon.com/Omnibus.
Do you think in general this could solve the drug problems, addiction problems, if people just switched to a favorite podcast?
I think if you were wasted on drugs and you listened to the Omnibus Project, gradually it would give you a reason to get straight and to, you know, and to become a productive member of society. And then you'd have all this extra money because everybody knows that junkies are just swimming in cash. You could send it to your favorite podcast. Make the world a better place.
This is really going to reignite the American economy.
I think the pride is back.
Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. If the worst comes soon, though. This recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. And in that case, we didn't have to do the Patreon thing because the world will end.
Right. Let's hope that's not true.
Yeah, if the world's ever ending, we'll probably just edit out the Patreon part.
We'll be gone, too.
Right.
No one will be editing anything.
Let's say we have a little time. Let's say Mark Miles gets an hour.
I'm going to spend that time doing something else. So will you, and so will Mark Miles.
Not re-editing the Patreon plea out of the podcast?
We'll be like, oh, damn, only an hour?
I'll be canceling all my other Patreons.
Walking through the market square.
But if Providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.